Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Slash Filmcast After Dark, the part of the podcast where we talk about a variety of random topics, or sometimes we also review things. This week, our main discussion is going to be about the new Brandon Cronenberg movie, Possessor,
which Devendra and I have watched. Up for the main show. I feel like that's it. It's just too much.
Yeah, it's too much.
Yeah.
It puts the dark in After Dark.
Now, we got to call out. We got to call out that Jeff Cannot has not watched Possessor, nor will he.
Nope.
But he's going to hang around anyway.
Why not? What's the worst that could happen?
Now we didn't want Jeff to just hang around just for the conversation of Possessor. So we wanted to give Jeff a topic that he could discuss as well, right, Jeff? So in the After Dark, you wrote we have a section in our show document called Potential After Dark Topics. Jeff Cannata wrote, I like keeping the boxes for things. Where do you stand on boxes? So, Jeff.
Genuine question I have for you guys. I really mean this. It drives my wife a little crazy, but I have a physical, visceral reaction to throwing away boxes for things that I buy. Like, if we're getting new consoles, I have the original box I got my Xbox One in. I have the original box for my PlayStation 3.
Do you keep them, like, do you at least fold them up?
No.
They're still open? You're a madman. What?
I keep all of the foam inserts. I keep all the packaging. Yeah.
This is why you need a house, Jeff. You just need a space
for all it's your bad. Boxes. But you'd think that's the case. But then my wife goes, our house doesn't have enough room for this shit, Jeff. So you're saying I'm the crazy one. Neither of you are like this at all?
No. I mean, I've also moved since 2009. I moved once more in New York. Like, 2009 was a big move. And every move, you just dump all the shit. Like, you dump everything you cannot travel with. And this latest one, just coming to Georgia, was just like, yeah, I dumped as much as I could have, mainly out of necessity. But even if I had the space, I wouldn't want to keep things forever. I don't know. What are you going to use it for, you know?
Well, here's what I'll say. I did do that for a long time. I did keep boxes for a long time because I find it is easier to resell things if you have the box, right? Mm-hmm. And so I keep it purely for utility sake, Jeff, which is that one day I'm going to resell it. It's nice to have the box. This is
also if I need to move it from place to place. Like
It's true. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Literally the box and the stuff inside was designed specifically to protect the thing.
Yeah, but like if it's like a bunch of electronics, like let's say it's like an iPad and a laptop, let's say it's like I can just throw that into a bag. I don't need to put them back into boxes unless I am selling them.
I know. It's weird. I have like all my old iPhone and iPad boxes. I have my iWatch box.
Well, I keep all of my Apple stuff specifically because Apple stuff retains its resale value really, really well. Mm-hmm. And I'll often resell my Apple stuff and it feels better if you can sell someone the stuff with the original packaging.
And like, also, those boxes stay sturdy, you know?
Yeah, like they stay sturdy. Yeah. They don't like discolor very easily. So when you sell a phone and you're like, here's the original box it came with, it's kind of like, it gives them a vote of confidence. They're like, oh my gosh, this guy is like into his shit because he kept the original box, you know? Like,
yeah, I'm into my shit, dude.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Anyway, 2 feet from me right now, I have my Dreamcast in its original box.
That's pretty. Okay. That's pretty good.
I don't condone any of this. What you're
that's
saying.
Pretty good though. At least you got to keep the good things, right? You keep the Dreamcast, but you got to know when to cut things loose.
How do you know what's the good thing and what's not the good thing? I just keep it all. Love.
The things that bring you joy, you know.
Yeah, the things that bring you joy. Yeah,
yeah.
It all brings joy. I wouldn't have bought it in the first place.
Having just moved and also throwing my stuff into a truck and hoping it survived a cross country trip from New York to Georgia. I've learned there are a lot of great quality boxes out there. So if you need like a good strong box for your desktop PC, my desktop is made out of glass, guys. the case is tempered glass. So I had to be very careful. And yeah, U-Haul apparently makes great like double thick, super strong boxes for all sorts of electronics. And that everything I had survived. So
Devendra uses a quantum computer for his desktop, by the way. Yeah. It's made out of gold discs.
For some reason, I thought glass was a good idea. It's probably not a good idea, but it looks cool. Yeah.
All right, Jeff.
All right. I guess that's all we need to talk about. I'm the crazy one. We've determined it. Moving on.
But we've also accomplished nothing because you're just going to stick with the boxes.
I have a very difficult time getting rid of the box. I mean, I have like my Sonos speakers boxes. I have a closet full of empty boxes. I know. I'm the crazy one. It just
feels like a waste of space. You know, it feels like you could be using that space for other things that would arguably give you more pleasure / joy.
Or at least get a storage space or something.
I'm not going to pay for a storage space. But anyway, it sounds like you guys are on my wife's side.
To be in storage? So. I see.
If you're gonna, I don't come here for you guys to side with my wife on things. That's you know.
I mean, she's a smart lady. I would listen.
Very disappointed.
Yeah. Fair.
All right, let's talk about this crazy movie. My topic was an abject failure.
I thought it was pretty good.
Okay, good. I appreciate it.
I'm also surrounded by boxes. So I have a particular aversion to boxes because it's my life. If I turned on my webcam now, I'm surrounded by review boxes, all sorts of boxes, cool boxes, boring boxes, and things I have to go back to. Like, I feel like one of my biggest problems is I get a lot of cool stuff, but eventually it has to be packed up and shipped back. And that is so annoying. It's just the worst thing in the world. So it just ends up piling up in my office until they start to crush me. So I hate boxes. I try to avoid piling them up if I don't have to, basically.
I think I just came from a bygone era now at this point that was pre-digital, you know, just barely pre-digital. And I grew up collecting comic books.
Right.
And, you know, action figures in their original packaging was a thing, which just kind of isn't anymore, really, you know? And I think I retain all that stuff, like a vestige of a bygone era that it just, I have this like mint condition, original packaging DNA in me somewhere that I can't shake. Yeah.
There's stuff I'd want to keep. If I could have kept my Super Nintendo box, I sure as hell would have done that, you know? And the Dreamcast thing, that's a good call, too. That was my first console I bought for myself, and I loved it so much.
Yeah.
So have we convinced you, Jeff, you're going to get rid of all the boxes now?
No, it sounds like I'm convincing Devinter right now. It sounds like I'm winning him over a little bit.
Well, no, you know I keep the stuff I like, you know? I'm very sparing about it.
You know, the thing like I think is just wild is like people who take like bookcases, like shelves full of books with them everywhere. It's like, wow, like because books are heavy. You know
books
what I'm saying?
Like,
I dump all my books as much as I can. Yeah.
I mean, that was like the first, you know, that was like moving from college to my first place. Yeah. And then the three places after that was just like all carrying fucking books everywhere.
Yeah.
And, you know, then you
don't
just realize
college books anymore. Yeah.
Yeah. And comic book collection, I have, you know, boxes and boxes of comics, and you know, hauling them with me everywhere is a pain in the ass. And board games, too. I mean, I think board games is in
board
that
games. Oh, my
place.
God. That is because you got to keep those boxes.
I fully support keeping board games.
Yeah.
FYI.
Yeah. I mean, I have hundreds of board games.
The point is there is utility in keeping the boxes. You know what I'm saying? Like, I guess there's some people out there who like take everything out of the boxes and like put them into some binders or whatever. It's like, I can't even comprehend that.
That like gives me shivers down my spine. Like I get the heebie-jeebies. Yeah. It's not cool.
Okay. All right.
Speaking of horror, he transitioned.
Speaking of keeping things inside of containers that don't necessarily belong. Possessor. It's a new movie by Brandon Cronenberg. And I'm going to read the plot summary from the internet. Tasia Voss, by the way, really cool name. Great name. An elite corporate assassin.
Sounds like a Star Wars character. You
yeah,
know?
Seriously. Takes control of other people's bodies using brain implant technology to execute high-profile targets. Now, Devendra and I have both seen the movie, and at some point we're going to spoil the movie.
Yeah.
But Devendra, why don't we give like a quick one-minute like or three sentence summary of how we feel about this movie. I'll just say this is one of my favorite movies of the year. This is an incredibly well done sci-fi thriller. The performances are awesome. The concept is awesome. You know, it reminds me of these other movies that we've seen that are kind of mood poems, right? Mandy or She Dies Tomorrow, right? Mm-hmm. Movies that Jeff
but
really
there's
like
a lot more
but,
going on
but,
this
but
than those. Yeah.
Jeff, so Jeff, it's like Mandy or She Dies Tomorrow, but there's a plot. Basically, right?
So nothing like those movies.
Imagine those movies.
Absolutely nothing. But yeah.
I think the it's incredibly gruesome. I watched the uncut version, the unedited, mm-hmm. the unedited version, and
they changed the title for it.
Yeah, it's called like Possessor Uncut. Possessor Uncut, right? And I just can't say enough good things about it. The other thing I'll say is, like, somebody pointed out to me on Twitter today that they captured a lot of the visual effects in camera, right? Mm-hmm. There's no CG or anything like that.
Yeah.
And it is really, really effective. So I love this movie. I think it's awesome. Devendra, your thoughts before we kind of summarize the plot and talk about the movie?
I feel like the basic thing is that the fruit didn't fall far from the tree, right? Like, I love David Cronenberg movies, especially when they can be, I think it's something like Existenz, you know, a movie that's dealing with technology and the state of society, but also like weird, gnarly, organic tech and things. It's just weird. It's just weird, man. Give me some weird shit. And I feel like this movie is very much that. It is very, it's a bit like, reminds me of Inception. Except like even more Inception, which by the way takes a lot from Existenz, but really also is far more gruesome, and it's the idea of just literally possessing somebody else's body like a puppet. It's an astonishing thing. It reminds me of like almost like a was it the Millennium Actress director whose name is escaping me right now, but it reminds me of one of those things or Paprika, where. Yeah, it's a high concept of what's I think would be a typical genre movie. Like this is an assassin movie, but an assassin movie unlike anything you've ever seen before. So yeah, I loved it. It's super gruesome. It is not for everybody, but it is certainly for me.
All right. So from this point forward, you should assume we'll be talking about the plot. Jeff Cannata, by the way, are you you a fan of the senior Cronenberg by any chance?
Yeah, I mean, Existenz is a movie that mm-hmm. I like. I don't think I've seen his entire oeuvre, but there are definitely Cronenberg movies that I mean I'm not you know me I'm not into the like
you've seen History of Violence, Eastern yes, Promises,
yes,
you know,
that Eastern kind of Promises stuff. Is awesome, is an incredible
yeah,
movie.
Yeah,
I was never really super into History of Violence. I thought it was okay. No, I'm thinking of a different movie. History of Violence is great. I was thinking of American
Viggo Mortensen. Right?
Yes,
Viggo
History of Violence.
He's in both of those movies.
Yes, so. I was thinking of American History X.
wow.
Yeah, different movie. No, History of Violence is awesome. Eastern Promises is awesome. Yes, I love those movies. Yes, very much.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, Possessor has one of my favorite, like one of the best movie openings I've ever seen. Right, and you guys remember when like movie openings used to grab you? You know, like, there's like an art in crafting a movie opening that makes you be like, oh my gosh, I got a good, like, makes a me good sit up in my open. Chair.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's an excellent cold open. It's like, but there's some enigmatic parts of it. But basically, the movie opens with like Tasia Voss assassinating someone while she has been brain implanted into the body of a woman, basically. And she goes and she just like assassinates someone in the most gruesome way imaginable. Where she stabs him in the throat and then continues stabbing him until he is completely a bloody pulp.
20 times. Yeah.
It's I actually was like, you know, to be honest, I actually felt like maybe I could have dealt with like not watching the director's cut in this time. You know, like usually Jeff, I'm trying to involve you tangentially in the conversation, you know, because you haven't seen the movie. But like, do you generally have an opinion on like director's cuts? Do you prefer director's cuts to like the regular cuts? Do you have any opinion on that?
You know, that's a really interesting question. I think it's case by case.
Yeah.
I think
some
you sort
directors
of have to
go insane once yes. they're like untethered. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think I've always approached it with what I've learned about the movie and why is there a director's cut, right? Did the studio come in and take over, or is it just this sort of like vanity project for the director? There's a wide range of those. So I think it's case by case for me.
This is the first director's cut I've seen where I'm like, you know what? Maybe I didn't need to see the director's cut. You know, like maybe I could have watched the normal version.
If I'm going to go into this world, I want the full, give me the full, give me everything, all the stabbing, all the, I'm sure there's like more nudity probably in this version than in some of the other ones. Yeah.
It's incredibly graphic nudity and stabbings basically is what is in this movie.
Sign me up.
Are we enticing you to watch this movie?
Man. I mean, you had me at Mandy. But now we've gotten to incredibly graphic stabbings. Yeah.
So then you find out that then the premise is introduced. The mm-hmm. opening of this movie is so fucking good. Like, I'm just like, when I saw it and then it cuts to the title card, I'm just like, holy shit, that was good, you know? And weird effect, though, is there was like 18 production companies that helped to make this movie. And and the opening segment of the movie intercuts between the production company names and the action of the first scene. And
it's like, we got to get this movie started, but we also have to
thank all of our sponsors. And the thing is, what was so weird about it was some of the production company names are like kind of ambiguous.
Yeah.
And so it's like, you know, Ontario Film presents, or it'll be like Ontario Films, or, you know, something like that. And there was a few names where I'm like, wait, is this part of the film? Or is it like, is this like an avant-garde, like, you know, series of text things? You know, anyway, so just a random observation. But then basically you find out that Andrea Riseborough, who is, in my estimation, one of the most beautiful women working in Hollywood today, a very unglamorous role for her, in the sense that, like, it seems like she's like wearing almost no makeup. Like, she's constantly in situations that are really, really
also
unflattering
for Mandy,
for her.
By the way, the other Mandy connection.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, yeah. But she's basically like kind of in a role that's like very what's the word? Kind of like in the Danny Boyle film Sunshine. Like, many mm-hmm. actors in that movie didn't wear makeup because they wanted it to look like more raw and real. It feels to me like kind of the approach they took here, where she is in a pretty like rough state throughout most of the film.
She looks like a ghost throughout this entire movie.
And it's part of the character that she's like struggling with who she is. So anyway, she goes
by the way, perfect actress for a role where she's putting on other people's skin, you know, figuratively, because I can never remember her face. Her face is so enigmatic to me. So like, she will pop up in the movie and I will have no idea it's Andrea Riseborough. So just wanted to say that. I don't think I'm the only one with this problem. Yeah.
She's like, she was in Oblivion. She was in Birdman. You know what I mean? Like, she's a great actress. And, but it's, she often looks different from film to film because she really, to me, it feels like she really gets into the role she's in. So anyway, loved her in her whole performance, but really most of the performance in this movie is she basically inhabits the body of this guy played by Christopher Abbott, right?
Love him. Love him
the guy's
so
name?
Much.
He's awesome as well.
Yeah.
And her job in this movie is to assassinate, Christopher Abbott's character is dating the daughter of a Google/Amazon-esque company.
It doesn't matter. Right? It doesn't matter what it is, because it's Sean Bean. You got to kill him. Kill him. Yeah.
Sean Bean is the head of like the Google of the film. Jeff Cannata, are you a fan of Sean Bean deaths in movies?
How could you not be?
You can't miss a Sean Bean death.
Built around the Sean Bean death.
Come for the Sean Bean, you stay for the Sean Bean death. You know?
This one, by the way, is particularly brutal, I have to point out. Like, you know that you see Sean Bean in the movie, you're like, he's got at least a 50% chance of getting murdered.
Die. The Sean Bean death thing is such a meme that they put in Hitman. Like, he was an assassination target.
The video game
point.
Hitman, you're
saying,
right?
Yeah. And also, this movie is basically Hitman, except if you were just diving into somebody's skin, you know? And I feel like my one major disappointment with this movie was that it's all like, you know, it's all like wireless tech. It's like they kidnap the person, right? And then they like, they like put them down under, and then they set up some sort of brain implant, and you're in a pod, and you're controlling them remotely. I was imagining something sort of like from Lovecraft Country, of just people just peeling off somebody else's skin. But we don't get that. We don't get that. I'm sad.
Yeah, yeah. So Jeff, the way it works, if you're even paying attention, which is okay if you're not. But the way it works is they implant like a wireless implant into the person's brain, and then they wirelessly transmit someone's kind of thoughts to that brain, and they take over, and then they murder people. Then they quote unquote pull them out. So that there's
by
evidence.
Making them shoot themselves in the head first.
By making them shoot themselves, like, they sever the host connection. Mm-hmm. The brain implant dissolves. People are none the wiser
crime.
That you've been in the brain.
Perfect crime.
Perfect crime.
The victimless crime, other than the person
all
who
the
is implanted and everyone who is murdered.
I think it's a victim full crime.
Yeah, victim full crime. she basically takes over this guy's body for one last job. But then the problem is that she is unable to fully kind of control what he's doing. Mm-hmm. And so he kind of takes back over his body, and not only takes back over his body, kind of assumes control of her thoughts as well, right? Like, is able to get information out of her brain. And so there's a lot of this really cool imagery of them like melding minds and everything like that, that I thought was very, very interesting, very well done. And as I mentioned, like a lot of it done in camera. The main image, if you Google Possessor, right, on the internet, is you see Christopher Abbott's character wearing an Andrea Riseborough mask, which is what happens in the movie, like at one point where they're like melding brains, is like where like he puts on her mask. Yeah.
By the way, let me just say this about Christopher Abbott. He's been in a bunch of movies and a bunch of TV shows, but I learned to love him as an actor in the TV series Girls. He plays the boyfriend of one of the characters, and in the very final season of that show, he comes back for a single episode, right? And it is just a fucking remarkable thing. So ever since then, I've been super impressed with him and everything he's done. So cool to see him be in such like a weird genre movie too. Like it's pretty chill. Yeah.
Yeah. He's awesome in this movie. Mm-hmm. He has trouble kind of managing things. And there's this really pretty significant, brilliant section in the middle of the movie where she is losing control of Christopher Abbott's body. Like Andrew Riseborough's character is losing control of his body. And it's very trippy and it's very out there. And you feel this horror that's happening of losing control. Like Jeff Cannata, I ask as someone who hasn't seen this movie, isn't it a terrifying idea of like someone can take control of your body, murder a bunch of people and then kill yourself. And then like no one knows what happened.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like,
no, that's not terrifying.
Jeff, how do you feel about VR? You know, we're almost there.
Yeah. I mean,
VR actually plays a significant role in the film, actually. But
Do you remember, you guys remember Strange Days?
Of course.
Yeah, it's very similar to that.
I love that movie.
Yeah.
I love that movie.
That movie's also incredibly messed up. Like, just the one scene in that movie that occurs, like, towards the end. It's just, I have a hard time rewatching it, but it's incredible. But
that's one of those sci-fi concepts that's, like, just stuck in my head, you know? This idea of, like, recording incredible experiences and then selling those because you can just plug them into your, you know, your nervous system and live it out as if it was real. Yeah. So like people do crazy ass shit just to be able to sell that so I can live vicariously through them. What a cool sci-fi concept.
I mean, that's basically TikTok now, right? It's all the TikTok
it's
pranks.
Just TikTok. Yeah.
Catherine Bigelow, amazing director. I recently rewatched Zero Dark Thirty, which has its problems from a political standpoint, but has one of the most brilliant kind of final action sequences. Mm-hmm. Super tense action sequence that you already know how it ends, right? You've already read how it ends, and it's still incredibly tense. Very talented filmmaker. Anyway, back to this movie, Possessor. So basically what happens at the end is Christopher Abbott's character goes to Andrea Riseborough's character's house, goes to Tasia Voss's house to kind of ask her husband and child, like, what the fuck did your wife do to me? I don't understand. Of course, they have no idea because they don't know about her job. And everyone gets killed. Everyone gets killed at the end, right?
A child's head gets exploded.
Oh.
Yeah.
And basically, Jennifer Jason Leigh, Tasia Voss's superior, she took over Tasia Voss's child's brain and made sure that the kind of termination took place. Mm-hmm. And it is like one of the most bloody, gruesome scenes that I've ever seen, and even one of the most bloody, gruesome scenes in this movie, which is saying a lot in a movie in which many people are killed gruesomely.
Yeah. But also, a child's head gets exploded in this movie. Like, not like scanner style, but like a big chunk taken off with a gunshot. It's just like, oh, you could not even, you couldn't surprise me more movie, but in fact you went there. So yeah, it's a bit much.
The very end of the movie, right? Did you notice this, Devendra?
Mm-hmm.
She basically, the people who go in and possess someone's body, they have to take a test afterwards. Kind of like, it's almost like in Blade Runner 2049, like the cells interlinked kind of thing. Yeah. But they have to take a test where like they show you a bunch of items from your past and you need to talk about them to make sure that like your memories are your own and you didn't like mix your memories with other people. And she talks about this butterfly. She's like, I killed this butterfly one summer. I had it mounted I always felt bad about it. I still do feel bad about it. That was what she said the first time around. But at the end of the movie, she gives the same speech, but she doesn't say that she feels bad about it. And I think, and many people on the internet have interpreted this movie to be about Andrea Riseborough coming to terms with the fact that she is basically a psychopathic killer. It's about, I mean,
she does not react to her child, to her shooting her own child.
Right.
She doesn't react to that.
And, yeah. I mean, earlier on, there's this really creepy scene where she's standing in front of her husband and her child's house and is like practicing what she's going to say. You know, you'd be like,
to remember how to be a good wife.
To remember how to be a human. Yeah. To remember how to be a human. She's like, you know, dinner? Yes, I'm so hungry. Like, she just says like basic, like average things like that because she's practicing them to herself because she knows that she can't get it right on her own authentically because she maybe has lost herself.
Like her grip on reality is definitely slipping. Yeah.
I loved all that stuff, all that trippy stuff with Krista Roberts' character in the middle, and like the fact that there was another guy, the guy from the office that came to like save him, and then she wakes up and the guy is dead. You know, like you're just like, oh my gosh, like this guy lost time and then he killed someone while he was losing. It's just like, it's all really, really,
it's all really good. And there's some
storytelling,
like,
yeah.
Nice world building too. You're bringing up the VR bit, Dave, and it's like, the Christopher Abbott's character works as a grunt in this company where it's just like, it's a data mining company, I guess, because they go in, they're line workers, they put on a VR headset and they just stare at people's webcams, like out through their webcams all day. And like his job was just like, like what kind of curtains does this room have? You know, going from room to room to room while people are just living their lives oblivious to, you know, the webcam peering back out at them. That alone, I think, is a great concept because it's a thing we worry about right now. And we're not that far off when it comes to data mining. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Jeff Cannata, have we convinced you to see this movie? Is my question.
It's like we're telling you a scary story at the campfire. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it sounds like it, you know, it sounds like it has some really incredible concepts.
Yes.
And I have to say, as we've been talking this whole time, there's been a little voice inside the back of my head that's been like, I kind of don't like that I've become the like fragile prude of the podcast, you know? I don't like how everybody has to like tiptoe around the scary movies that Jeff won't like. But I guess I kind of have to own that a bit because I do,
Here's what I'll say, Jeff. I don't actually feel that way because this movie is, I would say, particularly upsetting. I would say more upsetting than His House, but like of the same kind of caliber, right? And like,
right.
In the sense that this is not like an average movie with like a little bit of upsetting stuff sprinkled in. You know what I'm saying? Like if that was the case, I would say, Jeff, you're really delicate, but I totally respect someone not wanting to subject themselves to something like this. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's also a movie that I've seen it. I can't stop thinking about it now. You know what I mean? Like I need I tweeted that I watched this movie. Somebody tweeted back that they watched this movie twice on election day. Which is just gives you a sense it's both a sign of whatever this person's mindset is, but also a sign of, like, this is a movie that really grabs people and like burrows under your skin literally and figuratively, you know. And I think
it's very, very funny that we chose to do Ted Lasso instead of this movie. Like that was the pendulum that we were oscillating between.
Before we wrap up, Devendra, any other favorite sequences in the movie that you want to call out?
I feel like the whole confrontation thing with him and Sean Bean, like there is a party Sean Bean is just lording over everybody, and he has an initial conversation with him, and Sean Bean's like, how do you like the shitty ass job I gave you, son? Because he's dating, you know, he's dating Sean Bean's daughter.
That was so fascinating was because. Yeah. So basically, Jeff, the premise of this last job is she has to take over this guy's body who's dating the daughter of like the CEO of this big company that's like Google or whatever.
That's her in, yeah.
And you find out he's already working at the company. And so I'm thinking, oh, he's like some kind of executive there or something like that, right? But what you find out is that Sean Bean gave him a job basically doing data mining where he sits at a screen all day watching things in VR and categorizing them by hand.
He is actually in VR, but staring at a screen in VR, because the VR thing is just a desktop.
It's like a job simulator. The VR interface is a desktop. Yeah, exactly. It's a job simulator. That's right. And so it's a job that like is not as glamorous as the one I imagined for this character at this point in time. And what I love about the script is like a character says like, you know, why would Sean Bean's character want to do something like that? You know, it must give you some kind of high to like control someone that way. Yeah. And it's obviously commenting on the themes of the film, but like in a completely oblique way. I really appreciated that. I mean, maybe it struck some people as very obvious, but I like that. So yeah, so they go over to Sean Bean's house and they have this big confrontation, and he brutally beats Sean Bean.
Well, that was the second confrontation, right? The first one was just like him drunkenly being like, "You owe me an apology, dude," and like some people just like rough him up and throw him out, and somehow he's still able to get back into the house, and then repeatedly stab Sean Bean, and then poker through the eye, I believe.
Poker through the eye, like ripping out Sean Bean's teeth, and you're thinking, oh, Sean Bean's definitely dead. We should actually disclose. As of the end of the movie, I don't think he actually died. He was just in critical condition. So it wasn't really a Sean Bean death, but it was like very much a Sean Bean head fake death. And then
he chases down Tuppence Middleton.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man.
Brutal. Brutal. It just
so brutal. Have you seen the
idea of like someone you love
being
inhabited by another person and then like turning on you and killing you and killing themselves? It's a horrifying idea, I think. Mm-hmm. And I think the movie brings it to life really effectively.
So the thing I'm unclear about is if Devendra holds this movie in as high esteem as Dave does.
Oh, I really enjoyed this movie. This movie. I don't know if it's one of my favorite of the year, but I really, really enjoyed it. And I can't stop thinking about it. So it's probably going to burr its way in there. And I definitely want to go back and check out Brandon Cronenberg's first movie, or his last one, was Antiviral in 2012. Yeah,
it's a great film. It's a great film. I'd recommend anyone check it out. And I'm talking about Possessor right now. This is one of those movies where, like, I've seen it. I'm going to dive into, like, all the special features. Yeah. Jeff Goldsmith over at the Q&A did an interview. I'm going to listen to that. You know, like, this is one of those movies that I'm really going to be pretty obsessed with for the foreseeable future.
And the iTunes release has a lot of good special features. So
Yeah. Looking forward to it. Mm-hmm. All right. We good?
I think in summary, we should just say,
yeah,
keep your boxes.
I think Jeff likes box. We like multiple stabbings.
I think in summary, it's fair to say that the containers for things, the things that surround the things,
important,
often end up becoming the things.
Ooh. Right?
Often end up becoming as valuable as the thing itself, or share characteristics of the thing that it is containing.
Mm, I see what you did there.
That applies to both Possessor and the boxes question, you see. Nailed it.
By the way, we got a message on Twitter, which I think is important to the podcast.
Yeah, I saw that too.
Mank is not streaming until December.
But I took the liberty of Googling it while you guys were talking, and Google is still saying it's this Friday, so I don't know.
Well, the release date theaters this Friday. So the theaters still exist. Movies are still going to theaters.
Yeah.
Mank is apparently December 4th. Yeah.
Shit. Well, I'm sorry, guys.
Just cut the episode right there, just after the shit. Ha ha ha.